everyone doing out there today. Jets Guru with yet another episode. Happy Father's Day out there to everyone. Hope you guys have a good day. Hope you guys get to do what you want to do. Hope you guys don't get frustrated today. And I hope people honor the day like they do other holidays. But welcome to Jets Guru. And here is yet another week talking about Jamal Adams again. It just doesn't stop. He's like the Energizer Bunny, for those who don't know that commercial. But I think our viewer base is right around in there where they should know what that is. He's just nonstop, man. And he knows. Jamal's a smart guy. He knows what he's doing. And he knows that if he likes a post with him in a Cowboys jersey, that everyone's going to see it. They're going to screenshot it. They're going to try to put it on ESPN. And they're going to do all that kind of stuff. And that's exactly what's happening. And, you know, it's like a child to me, to be honest, because he knows what's going on. And because he knows that what he did and what he says and this kind of passive-aggressive nature in his conversation. To me, I think he's done here, Kevin. That's just my opinion. I just think that how could you play like a Jet when you've basically said you want to play for every other winner or every other team, it seems like, but the Jets? And another thing to this whole conversation is that he's also willing to play out the remainder of his contract, or at least that initial trade year, and not worry about his deal, but not give the Jets and new GM Joe Douglas, who really is just starting to be able to put this team together, because he didn't pick the team last year. It's crazy, man, that your best player acts like this. But I think long-term it's a good thing for the Jets, because honestly, I think the leadership needs to fall on Sam Darnold, which he's doing right now by conducting offensive camps. Everybody's there. The big guys are there, the small guys, the rookies. They're all there. And I think that's showing leadership. And if you've noticed, Joe Douglas has been drafting a lot of captains, a lot of high-character guys. And I think they're going to rally around somebody like that. And he's just a really young man. Remember, Sam Darnold is the same age as Joe Burrows, but he has 3 years of NFL experience coming up. So it's going to take a little bit. But I think Jamal Adams, with him eventually being off this team, because I don't see how they work this out. And the only way they're going to be able to work this out is by overpaying him at that position, which Joe Douglas has shown that he is not willing to do that at all, at least in any of the interactions I've seen him with the Jets being the GM. He is going to get the best value out of that particular move, player, or deal. He did it with the Leonard Williams deal to the Giants. They did it with drafting and trading down and getting the value that they wanted and filling in a couple more holes for the football team. He did it in all of the contracts that he signed for the offensive linemen, all fair deals. He brought in some of the Jets players from last year back on one-year deals. He's not cheap. This is just how you run a good team. You just don't throw money all over the place into positions and needs when you don't know what's ahead of you. Another thing that's not being talked about, Kevin, is the fact that these contracts roll. So there's going to be an issue if the NFL doesn't play this year. And there's a good chance that it doesn't play. And it's something we need to get into more. But there's a good chance that they don't play. And those contracts roll. And it doesn't make sense, if that is going to happen, for the Jets to pay Jamal Adams to sit around in his home when he's already has 2 years left on his current deal. When you already know that if we do not play an NFL season or a modified season, that Brian Poole is gone and Jenkins is gone and a few other guys are gone who are on their contracts that are going to be gone. So this could be a huge mess for the New York Jets contractually coming up. And I don't think we should just be throwing money out there in a potential lost season. And with a guy with 2 years left on his deal. And for a guy who still has not brought the Jets to the playoffs. Because a safety alone can't do it. And he wanted the dogs. So Joe gets the dogs. and he wanted better talent, so Joe gets better talent. And we all know how the NFL is. You don't get better until you have a good quarterback, and he doesn't get better until they have an offensive line. So what does Joe do? The very next offseason that he takes the job, what does he do? The first thing, he replaces the whole offensive line. Because we have established in this league that it's a passing league. And if you can't keep your quarterback upright, you can't throw the ball. Or you can't throw the ball with consistency, which is what good teams do. And so he's building this football team. Can't you see that? Can't you see that? Because I know from a Jet fan on the outside, looking how things were done over the last 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, and looking at the rosters, this roster has the potential to be a playoff team next year. It really does, especially if health is not a factor or a huge factor like it was last year. And he doesn't see that. But he wants to go to all these other teams. He's willing to do this all for them. And Joe Douglas sitting back is like, really? We drafted you. These fans love you. You're basically the face of the Jets. You're not going to be the face of the Cowboys or the Chiefs or any of these other teams. You're all of that here. And you're going to get paid, my guy. Just honor your contract a little bit. 2 years. 2 years is a lot. Considering they can also tag him for another two. Be humble, my guy. That's the way to go.
I think Mr. Smith is frustrated. No, there's a bunch to cover in this story. Like, obviously, it's getting to the point, and I know we haven't dove into this too much, of no return, right? Where it's like, look, he just wants out. So how long do you put up with this kicking and screaming? And I think that's what a lot of the Jets fans are trying to figure out. One of the things I always point out is this doesn't just happen to the Jets, even though Jets fans act like it. It was just last summer that it was Jalen Ramsey doing the exact same thing, throwing the coach under the bus, throwing the GM under the bus, throwing the owner's son somehow under the bus. I don't even know how that happened. I guess he's in the organization somehow. And one of the things I'll point out, because the very next question Jet fans want to know is, when will this be resolved one way or the other? And there's two things. One, I think it's getting to the point where it's beyond signing him. And I actually don't agree with the Jets signing him anymore. And there'll be a lot of people who read my posts every day and is like, you know, over the last week, you've been like, you still think this gets done. And I honestly did until probably the last 2 days, because a lot of things on social media, you can always get behind. It was taken out of context. I didn't mean it. But Jamal's kind of got past that point where he's not subtly alluding, or people aren't reading between the lines on some of his comments. Like, he's straight out saying, like, the ship sailed. I'm not interested in being here anymore. Like, let's kill it. It's not that I hate New York City, but this ship has sailed. Like, I don't want to be here anymore. And then literally the next day, it's like you said, where he's liking everything Cowboys, following the Cowboys, not following this, not following that. Well, if you want to me, this is very much like the OBJ situation. And I know you and I talked about it before the show, where the Giants felt some of these immature things that we're dealing with, whether it's kicking, like kicking nets or flipping out on, you know, the sidelines or yelling at his teammates, or we just need to show him. And this is what Giants fans thought. We just need to show them that we're in your corner. We're dedicated to you and your cause and winning and getting better. So we're going to give you a big contract and make you happy. And that's what the Giants thought would make OBJ happy. And they went through another season. And I referenced this. This is where he's getting caught in pictures like snorting coke off models' stomachs and still going out to parties and still getting in trouble and still acting crazy on the sideline. Money doesn't create maturity. A lot of times it's the other way around. And I don't think the Jets can reward this behavior at this point. Like, it's more than making a statement now. You know, it's getting to the level of, it's not just him being immature, which is what I said on last week's show. You know, would you like him to be more mature? Yes. This week, it's like OBJ caliber stuff where you're like, is this even like winning? Like, can a guy who walks, talks, act like this have this big of moon swings? Like, can he be a winner? You know,
Yeah.
And I don't think OBJ can be a winner. Maybe when he gets at the later end of his career, like Randy Moss, where when he got to New England, he settled down and, you know, won. Maybe that happens for OBJ one day. But looking at what happened in Cleveland, you know, I mean, they were never really in the playoff race, even though right now Pro Football Focus has them as the number two talented roster in the NFL after the Kansas City Chiefs. They have Cleveland as number two. But then Vegas has Cleveland winning eight games because of personalities.
Yep.
Personalities sometimes, and we see it in the NFL all the time, it's usually not the most talented team that wins. It's the one with the right mindsets and the right approach to winning, which more often is being everybody being on the same page and not having me players. And while we hate the Patriots, that's almost how they won all of their games. Whether they won the Super Bowl or not, it was play the system. Don't play outside of the system. Do your job. And Jamal Adams doesn't seem like that guy. So I go back to the timeline, and I don't think any of us want Joe Douglas to do anything knee-jerk, and I don't expect him to do anything knee-jerk. One, we got to figure out if we have a season first. So the Jets don't – they have bigger fish to fry, believe it or not, than Jamal Adams. And I know he doesn't believe it, and his agents don't believe it, and ESPN doesn't believe it, and Jets fans don't believe it. We don't know if we're going to have a season, and that is bigger than Jamal Adams. So he can scream and kick and act like an idiot while other people are focused on causes and focus. And that's not that Jamal's not focused on causes, but he's equally focused on both right now. And I would rather have him be a leader of people and the youth by presenting a certain level of maturity that he's not doing right now, which is very disappointing. And even his own draft class, he's the only one in his draft class showing in a whole draft class, seven rounds of draft picks.
Right.
He's the only one acting this level of immature. Not one other name. How many people are drafted every year? 32 times seven rounds plus supplemental picks. And none of them are acting his level of immature. He's the most immature person in his draft class, at least in the media, which is disappointing. Now, let me jump back to the timeline. If we have a ceiling season, I referenced Jalen Ramsey. Jalen Ramsey, with all the things that he said bad about literally everybody in the organization, he didn't get traded until October 15th. October 15th was 2 days after week six. And you know why they waited that long? Because that's when they got the best offer. The offer they absolutely could not refuse. And I look to Joe Douglas to handle this very maturely, like Coughlin did, whether you like Coughlin or not. He didn't just trade Jalen Ramsey because Jalen Ramsey demanded it. And he also knew Jalen Ramsey wasn't going to, under the new collective bargaining agreement, take the huge fines that go with missing practices and games. They're humongous now. Humongous. So they waited and they got the deal that worked. And they pulled the trigger and made it happen. And before anyone says, well, that's Jacksonville. Good teams don't let their best players go. I hear that stupid thing in the comments all the damn time. CJ Mosley is pretty damn good.
Yep.
But the Ravens said not $17 million a year good. And they let him walk right out the door and stayed on top. Chandler Jones was second in the league in sacks. He had 19 sacks. And one of the things that always hurts my head is people say, Jamal's stats would be so much better if he was on a good team. Arizona gets their ass kicked every week. Every week, Arizona gets killed. In the fourth quarter, the other team is running the ball to end the clock on Arizona because they've already smoked them by the fourth quarter of games. And Chandler Jones gets 19 sacks a year. And guess who let him go? New England was like, see ya. See it. And that's when he was in his mid-20s, like Jamal. You're not the type of guy who wins. I'm sorry. And New England sees it. They said the same thing to Jamie Collins. They said the same thing to Lawyer Malloy. And it'll happen again. Because those aren't personalities that win. Or they're not going to pay $17 million for a middle linebacker. And that's what the good teams do. And Joe knows this because he's the guy who let go of CJ Mosley. So he's going to look at this and say, is this something we can win with and get the best deal? And I know some people think maybe it's Juju, maybe it's Yannick, maybe it's We'll see. Two picks and a player, and I'll be happy. And whatever picks they decide and whatever they get. But I do think they need to make a move. I just don't think they need to make it until they get the best offer.
Absolutely. And Jamal needs to think about this too, because it seems like he's so focused on money that he's not realizing that he could get traded to a situation that's worse for him playing style wise. And so I think also maybe even brand wise, you know, because again, he is basically the face of the Jets because of his voice, his personality, because of Sam Darnold's voice and personality. You know, I think that if he was to stay on they were both to stay on the Jets, I think they would share some of that leadership, especially visually as an organization because of who they are. And so I think that changes on different franchises. I think people forget how important you are when you play on a different team with another superstar. Like if you go to the Chiefs, you're never going to be on the level of Patrick Mahomes, ever, ever. So it's if you go to Dallas, it's the star, man. You know, and if Dak gets re-signed, it's going to be about the quarterback. And so he needs to look at a lot of different things other than just money, but also playing style. He had his best season under Greg Williams. So do you want to leave that scenario so quick, or does he not even care? Does he even care? He's like, you look at guys like Brian Poole signed for a one-year deal, Jenkins signed for a one-year deal. Guys who were in their primes. Brian Poole was the best slot cornerback in the NFL last year. You're telling me he couldn't get a deal somewhere else? It may not be the mega deal or the big time last deal he's going to get in his career that he was hoping for. And that's why he signed in for an additional year. But the Jets? You're telling me he couldn't get something better from someone else? Of course he could have. But there's something that he liked about this team. And I'm probably guessing it's the defensive coordinator and what they're trying to build here, and maybe even Joe Douglas, to say to this man who's the best slot corner in the league, hey, man, here's a year deal. And he was like, yeah, I'm good with that. Let's do it. You look at Jenkins. He's increased his sack total each and every year. And when you look at his share snap count and how he's used as a player, Greg Williams used him consistently. And it was probably really refreshing as an NFL player to be used correctly. And Jenkins had his best year of his career. He could have went somewhere else, maybe not for the deal that he was hoping for, but better than the Jets. But he took the one-year deal, bet on himself. And you don't bet on yourself unless you're also comfortable, right? Because if you bet on yourself and you're not comfortable and you're not happy, then you just go somewhere else and bet on yourself, one-year deal somewhere else. But there's something about the Jets that they like. And I'm probably guessing it's Greg Williams and how they're running this organization. Does Adams even care about that at all? Does he care that Greg Williams could run any package? Does he care that he wants to feature Jamal Adams as a pass rushing guy who brings that attitude and that dog mentality that he's always talking about? Does he even really care about that? Because if he did, it has to have some kind of weight, but that weight has not been shown. It has not been shown at all. And to someone on the outside looking in, he looks like he's money chasing. That's what it looks like to me. And now Darrelle Revis did the same thing, but Darrelle Revis arguably put up the best season of any cornerback in NFL history. And so after a while, you're like, you know what? We're probably not going to make the Super Bowl. I want to get paid. All right? I want to get paid here. And then he did. He went on and won a Super Bowl because that's how good Darrelle Revis was. Is Jamal Adams as good as Darrelle Revis? Hell no. At least not right now. Okay, he played a premier position on the outside, locked one-on-one. Rex Ryan would just leave him out there all game for large portions of the game, if not the whole game. He is one of those guys. You are not there yet. You have one outstanding season. Don't get me wrong, he had good seasons, but one outstanding season last year. Your team still didn't make the playoffs, and you're ready to just fly off to any other team? So none of the other stuff around you that helped you get those 8 sacks and, you know, all the hype and all that, none of that stuff around you matters. Okay, bet. It's just you, Jamal. It's just you. It's not how you're being used. It's not anybody else around you. It is just you. Good luck, sir. Good luck. He's not a bad human being. He does not commit crimes. I want to be clear about that. I'm not knocking down his character on that side of it, but that is not leadership. It's like Kevin said, it's way past. The only way that I think that you could come back from this is if you stay quiet now, right now. You stop the nonsense. If you're going to chirp, be smart about it. Stick to the numbers. You know, when Jamal talks, it's just, oh, well, this guy's done this, and this guy got signed, but I didn't get signed, and I'm this and I'm that. Talk strictly numbers. Talk how good you are compared to your contemporaries in the NFL. The numbers and the data are there. You have money. Hire someone to dig up a profile on you. You know, do like, I mean, and so you have information about yourself, legit information that you could share to say that's fine. Because you're all you're doing is saying your resume, and there's nothing wrong with that. But all this other extra stuff, that is nonsense. And like you said, Kevin, he's pushing himself beyond the contract, and he's pushing himself to the point where teams like the New England Patriots, the Pittsburgh Steelers, teams like that who usually win year after year, even though the players change, they start looking at you like, I don't know about that guy. You don't want to be that. And Jamal doesn't want to be that. He wants to be the guy that any team in the NFL would die to have on their roster. And he is. He's close to that. But he's pushing himself to the point where it's like, well, I'm not sure about that. And you don't want to be there. You don't want to eliminate possible scenarios for your life and your playing career. So I think at this point, he's already said everything you could want to say, plus some times 1,000. And I think, what else are you really going to say from here, Jamal? Just be quiet at this point. You've put your trade demands out on the table. You've said you've liked yourself in other people's jerseys. You've said, and you've told the fans like me and Kevin and everybody else to move on. Got none but love for you, but move on. I'm out the door. Just be quiet now and play football, because you're not going to force Joe Douglas's hand. And if he was going to force my hand, and I'm just saying this, Kevin, oh, I'm always going to try to get the best deal. But to be honest with you, who really usually gives you the best deal, Kevin? It's usually the bad teams.
For sure.
It's usually the dregs of the NFL. So don't sit here and be too much, Jamal. Because you could wake up one day in a uniform you really don't like, and you could be chirping, and they could turn around and say, well, we're definitely not paying you, and they could just keep tagging you. But now you're not even in a good market. You're with a team that's not rising up, doesn't have a young quarterback, doesn't have the tools around them. I think you said enough, sir, and you should leave it alone and see what happens and revisit it at the end of the season when you have 1 year left to play on your current deal.
Well, I'm sure we'll be talking about this again next week, because I don't think he'll take your advice, and he'll still have some smart things to say. Well, I don't know how smart they'll be, but smart, sarcastic, taking shots at the Jets. And unfortunately, that's one of the big news stories surrounding our team every week.
Yep, and it's really annoying. And hopefully we don't have to talk about it too much longer, but it has to be talked about. You can't just not talk about it, because he is part of the Jets. He is one of the captains of the Jets. You can't not talk about it when this is the new media out there. And that's what gets so frustrating. And I understand fans like, oh, well, we already talked about this. But it's new information. It's new stuff coming out, and you have to talk about it. And that's why it makes it so tough in a New York media, because you say something like this, you like a post, and this is what happens, because you have to discuss it. And it's like, that's why guys don't. That's why the good ones don't, you know, you don't hear anything, a peep from them for years and years, sometimes their whole career. It's that simple. You know, you could still be a leader. You could still have fun. You could still have a good time. You could still be yourself, and you could still be smart while doing it. But let's transition off that, and let's move over to more of the games. And I know we wanted to talk about Kevin. We wanted to talk about, what are the toughest home games for the Jets, right? Because we look at the schedule, and it's a tough schedule. It's not easy. And there's some quirky games and interesting matchups that, depending on how the Jets play, it could help them, but it's also very daunting. You know, you play a division opponent right off rip away against Buffalo. you know, and then your first home game is against the 49ers. And honestly, Kevin, when you look at the schedule and how it's broken out, the toughest home game for the Jets might actually be that second game against the 49ers. I mean, that first game against the 49ers.
Yeah, I would say definitely the home opener is going to be a very tough game. San Francisco, I mean, we'll see what they look like. Most of their defense is coming back, and even their biggest player they lost, they replaced with a first-round pick. So they should be better. They also had multiple first-round picks, as you'll remember. So San Francisco, for sure, though it's a good matchup for the Jets in terms of their strength, is also our team's strength. So it'll be fun to see. But I would agree, San Francisco. I also think that back-to-back Miami. Now, granted, there's a bye week in between, but you literally go down to Miami and then turn around, and it's almost like they get 3 weeks to game plan for you, right? Because they game plan for the first game, then they have the 2 weeks of the bye week, then the week of your game. It's like that's 3 weeks that they get to prepare for your home game. And they just saw a lot of your players, a lot of tendencies. They got film of literally how you react to certain things that they do. So I could see that being a very tough game as well, though all division games are, right? Yep. So, yeah, when I look at it, San Francisco will be at the top of my list, probably that Miami game, right on the back of that back-to-back. And then, obviously, we play the Bills at home early in the season, too. And not to discredit the Patriots, though I am a little bit, by saying the Miami and Bills are the next two after San Francisco. But lining them up right before Halloween, still early in the season, I think that's week 2, 4, 6, 7. By week 7, we've played the Bills twice. And I kind of look at that as that's going to be a big turning point, like, in our season. You're right. We do have a tough schedule. And you definitely want to get those two division wins at home. Those Bills and Miami games are humongous. Not only to win the AFC East, but notch up wins for a wild card or playoff push. So I have to put those two next. And then if I was going to throw in one honorable mention, I think the Broncos defense is going to be very good this year. I don't trust Drew Lock per se. Adding Judy to that team is nice, but I definitely think the Broncos defense is legit. So that would be my kind of just outside looking in at the top three tough games at home this year.
And that's, you know, and that's a tough one, that Broncos game, because that's coming off, you know, a four, so it's a late start, a 4 o'clock game on Sunday, the 27th. And then you come and you play that Thursday nighter at 8:20. And you know, the players hate playing those Thursday night games anyways. And it's not going to be easy. It's a winnable schedule. You know, when you look at it, it's definitely winnable. You get some bailouts. You know, again, I think the Jets get bailed out with travel a little bit. Not as good as they did last year. I mean, last year was like, I've never even seen anything like that. I think they traveled like 3,000 miles total or something like that. I've never seen anything like that. But, I mean, they have some favorable games. You know, I think playing Cleveland at home is probably good for them. You know what I mean? Arizona, not having to travel out to Arizona. Because when you look at the schedule, I mean, there's so many West Coast teams, you kind of get bailed out. You know, you play San Francisco at home. You play the Broncos at home, you play the Cardinals at home, and then you finally have to travel, you know, to play the Chargers, you know, at week 6. And then that's also, you know, an interesting one too, because you're going from, you know, LA to Buffalo, but you have a full week to recover. They should be fine from that. So you get bailed out there. Kansas City, obviously that's a tough matchup, but travel-wise, coming off that Buffalo game, that's not really a big travel for them. So, you know, you don't look at that too bad. And then you got the back-to-back Miami games. Come on, man. Miami to New York. We travel all the time, right? 2 hours, 2.5 hours. You're good to go. And then they play the Raiders at home too. And then ultimately have to go to Seattle, right, with the week after. But here's the kicker into that. So they play the Raiders at home, so they get bailed out, so they don't have to travel. But then they have to travel to the West Coast the very next week and play Seattle. But the good thing about that is they play – the Rams the next game. So they're already going to be on the West Coast, you mm-hmm. know? So it's an easy transition, you know? So to me, that's not bad. So they get bailed out there and then they play at home against Cleveland and then end the season in New England. So you go from home to New England. So I don't think the travel is daunting for the team and they're not crossing too much. I think they get bailed out a little bit. The fact that Brady's out of the division, I mean, you play division opponents, you figure you split 1-1 with them, you know, but you never know how bad the Patriots might be. I know everybody's like, oh, there's no way they can be bad. They could be bad, guys. Listen, the NFL, as much as it is, I guess in any other sport, schemes matter more in the NFL than any other sport, but players still play the game. And you saw immediately last year the difference between someone like Tom Brady and Stidham. The moment he was put into the game, Jamal Adams picked him off. You know, there is a difference. It's that immediate. I promise you, we've seen it. We saw Luke Falk inserted into the game. You know, we saw Trevor Siemian inserted to the game. Completely different offense, like running a high school offense. Sam comes back in. He plays against Dallas. They play an awesome offensive game in the first half. They win the game. Totally different. That's what I'm trying to tell you guys. That's how big time. That's how big time it is. But I don't know. I mean, looking at this, I would say so then the 49ers is the toughest game. I mean, playing the Patriots, the schemes, it's always going to be a tough game, you know, playing against them, I think. But again, I don't know how bad they're going to be. So I think the Broncos, 49ers, Broncos, and Buffalo. I would say those are probably the biggest, toughest games for the Jets to play, at least at home for me. You know, I think Buffalo's defense is going to give the Jets a really big problem. The way that they're suited and how they play defense is, I think, how you beat the Jets. You know, they have a good secondary and they have a really good up front four. And we talked about this. It's going to be very critical for the New York Jets to be able to run the football this year. And when you look at this offensive line, they're a little bit unproven as far as running the ball. They have all the athletic ability in the world to really take Le'Veon Bell to the, you know, to the next level. But as far as running the football, there's not much there behind them. So if they wind up becoming a passing offense, and this would fall into the hands, to me, of Buffalo, you have to grind them out. You have to wear down that front four. That could be very formidable. And so I think they're going to be a tough matchup for the Jets all around. It's going to be a close game. I think Josh Allen keeps the game a lot closer. you know what I mean?
For sure.
So, you know, I think if Sam Darnold was on Buffalo, they would be a really hard team to beat right now, to be honest with you. But with Josh Allen, there's still a lot of unknowns about him. And they have their own dynamics too, right? You know, they have their Stephon Diggs, and how he reacts with quarterbacks. And, you know, Josh Allen is less accurate than, you know, Cousins. We know that. So, you know, this is going to be a very interesting matchup to see. You know, to me, Cousins is more of a pure passer. You know, Josh Allen has a big arm. There's a big difference there. And so I think that Stephon Diggs is going to have to – there's something inside of himself that he's going to have to mature, right? We talked about maturity with Jamal Adams. Diggs is going to have to show that too if he's going to be big time at Buffalo, because if he lets those emotions get ahead of him there, I could see a lot of struggles for them, because Josh Allen is not going to give you consistently – even what Cousins was able to give you. And he could be even very inconsistent at times, or very one player focused at times. And so he's got a world of question marks. And that Buffalo team, man, they're where the Jets were. Remember when Rex Ryan was here, and the players that they added to their roster are glue guys to finish and fill out this roster. I don't think Buffalo, and I think you might agree with me, Kevin, on this, they can't get any better than what they are. The quarterback can, and they can overall make the team better. But I think this defense, I mean, how much better can you really get on defense? I mean, their running back situation, they got two running backs. They now have Stephon Diggs. They have a little rotation of tight ends. Their offensive line is put together. I mean, really the only thing they are waiting for is for Josh Allen to take that next step, like Mark Sanchez never did in his third year. That they were waiting for. It is a huge year. There's a lot of pressure on Josh Allen to be the man this year. This isn't Buffalo's the surprise possible division favorite. This is now you are the division favorite. And when people don't understand, man, about pressure, when pressure is applied to your life, how you react and you respond tells everything. And I'm telling you, man, people fold under pressure. Under some of the smallest things, people fold in life under pressure. Imagine being a starting NFL quarterback for a $1 million-plus franchise. how much pressure it is. The Buffalo Bills, who've been dying to get into the playoffs and do anything and finally get a little taste. They are waiting for this. They are waiting for Jim Kelly's ghost to go away and those great Buffalo Bills teams that never won a Super Bowl. They are a passionate fan base like the New York Jets. And Josh Allen is your guy. And will he live up to the pressure, Kevin, of being the number one young quarterback in the division and leading this Buffalo Bills team to a division title and hopefully a Super Bowl run? Do you think they will take a step back? Or do you think they will accomplish that and go on a run this year?
Yeah, I think, I mean, they'll be in the mix. I think they're probably going to take a step back on defense, and I don't think enough people are talking about that. I think one of the questions that they had outside of Josh Allen, the two guys that led them in sacks last year, Jordan Phillips and Shaq Lawson, both left in free agency. You know, maybe they hope Jerry Hughes had 4.5 sacks last year in a short season. So maybe he comes back, but he's 31. So I don't know if you can count on that. Now, Trent Murphy is going to slide into the starting role. I mean, he had 5 sacks last year as a rotational player. Like, I don't know if they have a pass rusher. I kind of still think that they don't. And that's something that probably people look and say, well, Jets, do you have a pass rusher? But Jordan Jenkins is coming in like leading the AFC East in sacks. So I think it'll be interesting. I think they'll still be stout against the run with Star Lutuilielli. is a very solid defensive tackle and always has been. So I think as long as you have him and Ed Oliver, they'll be solid against the run. But they're not a team. I mean, they're going to rely heavily on their coverage. White is a stud. Kevin Johnson in the slot for them is a stud. I mean, they're pretty good. Josh Norman on the other side, I think, can be attacked, but their safety is a solid too. So I think they have a nice defense, but not a pass rush. And that can definitely catch up with you in this league. So I am kind of one of those teams who would put them like right where the – I don't think they're very far from the Jets. And I think if the Jets stayed as healthy as they did last year, even with that terrible offensive line, I think they would have been right there. Like instead of 7-9, you're looking at a 9-7 Jets team probably. If Mosley had stayed, you know, healthy and some of the other, if we had Anunua or Herndon, if we could have had one of them, maybe not both. But I don't see them as too far apart from the Jets. I see them as really close. While we have a lot of questions, they have a lot of questions. And I could see both of those teams shooting for 9 wins. And I think because they got Diggs, people aren't looking at what they lost, right, which surprises me a little bit because I'm a Jets fan and I'm just used to everybody focusing on the negative. But for somehow with the Bills, it's all positive, 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 even though I'm still not sure Josh Allen is a guy that when you have to throw it, you're going to be able to count on that. And until he does it, why should I believe otherwise? So I think they have as much to prove as we do. I just think because they kind of tripped and fell into the playoffs last year, they get a little more benefit of the doubt. They did go 10-6 last year. And one of the things that helped them, believe it or not, was they were 6-2 on the road.
Right.
Can they do that again? They were only a 500 team at home. The Jets were 5-3 last year. The Bills were 4-4 at home. Now you could say maybe that's because they sat their players out the last week of the season. And again, you could give them the benefit of the doubt, but there was still only 4-3 in all the games, but that one, it's not like they dominated playing in their division in the, at home. And they were only 3-3 in the division. So they didn't do great in the division either. So again, I think week one, we kind of let them off the hook. I think all Jets fans know that. And that's easier game that would have had the Jets 8-8 and them at 9-7. And again, they're right there. So, you know, I think it's wait and see for them. I'm not a total believer. And just like I said, that Jamal Adams throwing money at him doesn't create maturity. Trading somebody to Buffalo to a less accurate quarterback that will be playing in a lot harsher conditions than he did in Minnesota. Minnesota's in a dome for people who don't know. I know Green Bay is tough and Chicago is tough, but 8 dome games is nice. We'll see if Diggs' immaturity doesn't show up a lot like what we're seeing with Jamal and if that becomes a cancer for a young quarterback. I think we'll see. We already referenced that getting OBJ didn't help Mayfield as much as the people thought it would at that time. And why would this be any different? you already referenced they have a very deep roster in a lot of places. I said the exact thing about Cleveland, has a very deep roster. But if your quarterback doesn't have the head and you don't have the right personalities out there to make it happen, it could be very much one of those situations like Cleveland got that last finishing piece. And just as everybody was ready to crown them, they came crashing back to reality. And I could definitely see that happening with the Bills this year. I still think 8-8, 9-7, maybe 7-9 in that area. But I'm not ready to just give them the division.
Absolutely. And, you know, when you look at this team, and I've watched a lot of football over the course of my life, and I've watched a lot of division opponents of the Jets in the course of my life. And this particular Bills team, although they are very good and they're very talented, especially defensively, they don't scare me, right? They're a beatable team. Yeah, they did rest players against the Jets. They still lost, and they were losing against the Jets until Mosley got hurt. And, you know, and Sam, we come to find out Sam Darnold had mono and was already feeling the effects of it. So they don't, I mean, when I watching them play against us, I never felt like, oh my gosh, we don't have a chance. Like, you remember watching the Patriots game when they played us at home? And I think Luke Falk was a starter at that point. That was dominating. That was watching a team dominate another team. That is what that feels like. That was like, I'm getting frustrated. I can't watch this game type of deal anymore, right? Because it's that bad. Mm-hmm. When the Bills play games, you never feel like you're out of the game. You feel like you're fighting against a good team. You go 3 and out, but you never feel like you're out of it because you never feel like Josh Allen is going to bury you, right? You never feel like Josh Allen's going to roll down the field 3 or 4 straight possessions and put points on the board. You feel like if you have a solid defense, you're going to frustrate him a little bit and give your offense some time to get going and keep the game close. So Josh has to grow a lot this year, just like Sam does, but Sam doesn't have the amount of pressure that Josh Allen has to put up this year. And when I mean put up, I don't mean, you know, I was on a Jets AFC podcast, AFC East podcast yesterday, and he was like telling me like, oh, he had this many touchdowns. And I'm like, that's dude, he's talented. That's great. What he's going to have to do is he's going to have to make his completion percentage better. He's going to have to be like 5 to 7 points better than what he was last year if he wants this team to be like where they need to be and where they should be with this type of defense and the running game and then the new addition with Diggs. And if he can't do that, and he is just as, you know, Allen had a good season last year. If he's Allen of last year, could it be enough for the Bills to go on a Super Bowl run? Maybe. You know, because Mark Sanchez did it. He went on a Super Bowl run, but I don't think that this Buffalo team is as good as the Jets' number one defense with Rex Ryan that year. And even the second year, I can't really say that either. And to be honest with you, the Jets' running game was just brutal. We would just beat up on people running the football. I mean, there were just times where we would just run the football and teams couldn't do anything. They'd run for 200 yards, easy. You know, like I just don't really think that they have that type of team, which is they're not scary to me. The Jets were scary. Remember when the Jets had Rex Ryan team, they wouldn't win week in and week out. They struggled to stack those wins, but they were a tough out because of how good their defense was and how good they were able to run the football. And then you sprinkled in the talent of Mark Sanchez at that time who had talent. He was ascending and rising up, and they took advantage of those little moments, both good and bad. And I don't know if they have enough of a run, if their running game is as good as the Jets was. And I don't know if their defense is as good as the Jets was to push them enough to beat a Tom Brady, to beat a Peyton Manning, to beat that quality of quarterback in the playoff, in their primes, those types of games to push, you know, Ben Roethlisberger to the brink, like those types of things. I don't know if Buffalo's capable of that because I don't know if they're that good. You know, I think they're the weaker of the best division teams across the league. I think if you stacked up other division foes across the league, they would be of the weaker group on the bottom, in my opinion, even though they have a talented defense. So this season is up in the air. I really, truly believe that. And I think most fans believe that from all across the board. Even the Buffalo Bills aren't as confident as a team that you think they should be, as they're going to the playoffs with Tom Brady gone, all this, you would think that they would be like, dude, we are definitely winning the division. We got this, bro. It's not like that. They understand how good Sam Darnold is, and they understand that the Jets have a lot of pieces and they had a lot of injuries, at least the smart Buffalo Bill fans. And they do and they do realize that Bill Belichick is still with the Patriots, and he has been able to groom successful quarterbacks. Maybe not Tom Brady-worthy quarterbacks, but guys like Garoppolo and, you know, Brissett and guys like that. Even Matt Castle had a good year when, you know, Tom Brady went down. There is a bit of system with that team that they can turn over. We'll see how good it actually can be, but I wouldn't expect this team to be sitting in the mud too long, especially if Bill Belichick is connected to it. So this is an important year for the Buffalo Bills and the rest of this franchise. And mind you, I know, you know, Miami's probably a year or two away, but they're not going to be an easy out either. They proved that last year, and their team is better this year than it was last year. And so, so it's not going to be easy for this division, you know, and that's why I keep telling people, let everyone sleep on the Jets. Let them sleep on the Jets. And people are still talking about Sam Darnold's ghost and, oh, the offensive line. It's like they don't even do research, bro. They don't even know that the Jets completely revamped their offensive line entirely. So, you know, people got to do some more homework. But it is what it is. I do my homework. Kevin does his homework. And we do it every week. And we try to bring you a good show that you can get into, that gives you fan perspective, but reasonable perspective, that tries to be player-driven, game-driven, analytical, thought-driven. And we try our best. And, you know, the only way we could get to the places that get us more information and more content so we can get you guys informed and enjoy NFL and Jets football is by sharing us. The more you listen and the more you share, there's always somebody watching. Always. Always. Someone's always watching. And if we can get enough people to listen, enough people to watch, enough people to share, someone's going to approach us. And then we're going to be able to get into a position where we will be able to get you more Jets content the right way. You know, not, it boggles my mind how much resources people have and they waste. And I used to do it too. And you learn lessons in life, right? And you learn to make the best of what you have when you lose everything. And that's what I do, right? I try to make the best out of everything I have, even if it's just a little bit. And I see everyone has a bunch out there in the sports world that covers the Jets. And they don't use it to the best of their ability. And I'm trying to change that and help me get there. But the only way you could do it is by, only we could do it is by sharing it, watching it, consuming it. And you could do that by going on Spotify, Google Podcasts, anything. Go on all of them. We're on all of them. Google, Apple, all of them. And go to your podcast section on your phone and type in Jets Guru and you'll find us there with a new episode every week. This is episode 11. You know, a lot of the episodes we've been doing aren't necessarily date driven because of the way the NFL is now. So you could scroll back and listen to those older episodes too. There's a lot of good content and conversation that we had in there. And then also Thursday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern time, we have a video show with Krista and Ron that we do. And we go over, we try to keep the topics a little bit different when we can. Right now it's hard with the Jamal thing. That's every week, and we have a great time there. And we're also going to be doing an AFC East, a whole AFC East thing, so you can learn a little bit more about your division and come prepared in conversation and just to know a little bit more. And we'll have some more details on it. You know, if you want to go on Jets Guru right now, you could see the video that I was in from last week where we discussed who is the best quarterback in the division with Jets and Patriots and Dolphin fans. And I had to put it on them a little bit and give them a little bit of knowledge, let them know what, you know, what this Jets team is really about. So you could catch that on our homepage on Facebook, Jets Guru. And also on Facebook as well is Kevin's page that he runs. He has a show every week. The page is called Live Rounds. You can go on there. And Kev, what time is your show? And then also, what do you guys talk about?
Tuesdays at 7 o'clock, we try to get a round table. We have guests that call in, try to bring a fan's perspective on what we hear either at the stadium, on social media, and everywhere in between. You know, there's lots of different opinions out there. Even some that you probably don't know exist, some that we wish we didn't know exist. We try to bring those up as topics and have fun with them. You know, we do try to give a fan's perspective. We don't try to lob things in with same old Jets lazy analysis, but we also try to like kind of crack jokes at some of the different angles people come at the stories, and we have a lot of fun with it. So lots of Jets news out there. I know the offseason has been crazy, especially with COVID-19. There would have been a couple training camps open this week, you know, rookie camps and stuff like that opening next month. So I know, Daniel, as he referenced, we try to get as much Jets news out to you. New, switching it up, different opinions, different ways to look at things to try to give you a little bit of a fix between now and when this can finally get going.
Absolutely. And, you know, thanks for joining us. And, you know, we'll be ready for episode 12 next week, 12 p.m. Eastern time on Sunday for you. And sometimes you get a little bit logged out. You know, we don't have anybody helping us. And so the technology is what it is. But the latest you'll usually get is Monday morning on your trip to work or your workout or your run or your cup of coffee, whatever you want to do in the morning. So the latest Monday, but most times Sunday, 12 p.m. Eastern time, especially once the season starts for sure, to get you some upcoming information for the game that you're getting ready to watch. But yeah, we'll fine tune everything as it goes. It's new, it's running, and it's always rolling. So thank you so much for coming in. JETS, 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 Jets. See you next week. Peace.